Eric Walker got the job done well enough to get the ball Sunday at Texas. Big time Sun Belt Conference ramifications on the line at the Cajun Dome. Out of the booth? Back on the playing field? Are you kidding me? And the numbers are in for the Heisman winner today, Thursday, February 28th, 2019.
And the 2-0 to the plate. Fly ball hit a long way to right field. That is way back, and out of here. Halfway up the bleachers, out in the diamond deck. And it's 5-0 LSU on Beloso's second home run of the season.
Waiters back to Wade. Wade can't get the shot up, just throws it up.
Got it! Dwayne Wade right at the buzzer! Oh, my! He throws up a prayer, and it is answered! And Miami wins it 126-125! And this is his house!
LeBron does turn the corner. Goes to the rim. Gets it. Three-pointer. Good! LeBron from the corner buries a three with a defender in his face.
LeBron doing what LeBron does most of the time. How about that? Lakers beat the Pels. What's new? Nothing. How are you? Welcome. Thursday edition. The last day of the month of February. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show with my main man, producer extraordinaire, manning the 237 Roof Studios in the Master Control Suite in the beautiful building of KLWB 103.7, the game under the umbrella of Delta Media. Yours truly here. Studio 1A breaking news as we approach, and it is now apparent that the Philadelphia Phillies have won the Bryce Harper sweepstakes, finalizing a 13-year, $330 million deal with the free agent outfielder. Harper's contract, according to sources, will not include any opt-outs. So do the math. Do the math on that one. $330 million divided by 13 years comes to an average of $25.38 million. So he doesn't get our end, the $32.5 million a year, but he gets 13 years of guaranteed money. Wow. Wow, wow, wow. So to be determined, to be determined. We got a lot to talk about. It's great to be with you. Thanks so much for dialing us up on this last day of the month of February as we approach the Mardi Gras weekend all throughout Louisiana with all the fun and the festivities. I just hope the weather, golly, has it been raining every day of 2019? Sure seems like it. I'm so sick of it. CD, good afternoon, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing good, Jordy. It's definitely a busy day in the world of sports, so safe to say Hot Topic is going to be filled with all kinds of great stuff to talk about.
All right, well, let's see. So we have now found out what the measurables are of one Heisman Trophy winning quarterback in Kyler Murray. People were saying, oh, he's 5'8". He's going to be the smallest quarterback ever. Well, he did the measurables at the combine today. He comes in at 5'10" 1/8". 5'10" 1/8". He weighs 207 pounds, all of which seems to come in his calves and his thighs. He is low to the ground. That's one of the hottest topics around the annual gathering of the NFL's top draft prospects. So what does this mean? I don't think it makes a whole lot of difference. He would still be one of the shortest starting quarterbacks in league history. The two quarterbacks Murray's been compared to in terms of size, Drew Brees and Russell Wilson. Brees was 6'1¼", 213 pounds at the 2001 combine. Russell Wilson, 5'10 and 5'8", so he is a half an inch taller than Murray, and 204 pounds, 3 pounds lighter at the 2012 combine. Wilson's the only starting quarterback in the NFL under 6 feet tall. So the other quarterbacks out there, Ohio State's Dwayne Haskins, 6'3 and 3'8", 231. Missouri's Drew Lock, 6'3 and 3 quarters, 228. And Duke's Daniel Jones, the tallest of them all, 6'5 and 1/8, 221 pounds. So it doesn't matter about size, right? It matters about heart and it matters about skill. So we'll see what happens along the lines of one Kyler Murray. Fixing to, it just depends on if a team falls in love with him, right? That's all that matters. And then the other big news of the day is, and this was like shocking to me, but Jason Witten is going back to play for the Dallas Cowboys. He had a one-year retirement. I guess he never fully retired or signed retirement papers from the league, but after serving as an analyst on Monday Night Football, he's going to return to the Cowboys for his 16th season. Well, you don't have to be a Rhodes Scholar to read between the lines on this one. ESPN's ratings weren't very good on Monday Night Football, and Jason, they said, Jason, hey, it was fun for a year, but we're going to go in another direction. So, and I think Jason Witten ends up becoming a coach in the NFL, not a head coach, but a position coach, a tight ends coach. So I think this will be his stepping stone to that. And Jerry Jones, very loyal to his players. And look, he's a Hall of Fame tight end. No question about that. They're just going to have to push it back a little bit now as he's coming back for another year. Another Dallas superstar, Dirk Nowitzki, now comes out and says, hey, wait a minute. I never said I was retiring. I may want to come back next year. What in the world is going on? What in the world is going on? So we'll see. Now the question is, who's going to fill the booth on Monday Night Football? I wonder, what's more, is Monday Night Football the best gig in the NFL? Is Sunday Night Football? Does Monday Night Football go after Tony Romo? Do they go after Chris Collinsworth? Or do they just move Booger McFarland from the sideline up into the booth? I don't know. We've got a phone call. Tim wants to talk about Jason Witten. Tim, thanks for the call. Are you shocked by this?
No, I'm not. I would just like to say, you know, as the avid Cowboy fan in South Louisiana, we kind of saw this coming only because we know the type of person Jason Witten is. I didn't think he was going to stay out of football for long. When he said he retired, he wasn't even out of the game 3 months and they were trying to get him back. But my thing is, I think he's coming back not so much just to play, but to be more of a mentor in the locker room. We have a young team.
I agree.
Dak Prescott needs a lot of guidance, and that's one of the best that's ever done it. So
yeah.
I think he's coming back mostly for morale. But he's going to get his turn on the field, no doubt. But I think he's coming back mainly to be an influence in the locker room for a young team. So
I couldn't agree with you more, Tim. Thanks for the phone call. He's going to get $3.5 million to be a mentor slash tight end. That's not a bad gig if you can get it. And I still think coaching is the angle that he wants to pursue. And good for him. But who do you go after? Is Monday Night Football the prime gem? I mean, it used to be. Is it still? Or is the Collinsworth slide taken over on NBC? I don't know. It's the only game in town. So in that respect, it's pretty significant. So we'll see what direction they go to fill up that spot. Is Joe Tessitore going to still be the play-by-play announcer? Time will tell. Booger, get on the phone. Get your agent. Move up to the booth. Or do they go after Romo or Collinsworth? That'll be interesting to watch. All right, we'll take a timeout here. Let me set the stage for what's coming up on the program. Next segment, we're going to talk LSU baseball as they get it done. And one pitcher got it done to the point he's back in the rotation. Maybe by default, but he's back in the rotation this weekend as a Sunday starter. Big basketball game coming up tonight as the Raging Cajuns and Bob Marlin host the Coastal Carolina Chanticleers. Both teams 7-7 in Sun Belt play. They're not going to win the championship outright in the regular season, but they sure need to jockey for seeding in the Sun Belt Conference Tournament that will be in New Orleans. So it's a big game tonight at home for the Raging Cajuns, who got beat by double digits handily by Coastal Carolina in Conway, South Carolina, just a couple weeks ago. So it's payback time. Eric Mouton, the former Raging Cajun, will join us, talk about that. LSU has a new offensive analyst from that powerhouse known as William & Mary? Really? Brooks Cabina, the Advocate, will join us and tell us who this cat is and how many analysts are there on the LSU football staff now. Then we'll have Hot Topics at hour number two. Everybody talks about the Lakers and what they were offering the Pelicans for Anthony Davis. Nick Lance is a Celtic blogger up there in the great Northeast. We'll share some thoughts on what would the Celtics offer the Pelicans to get AD up in Beantown. And then Grant Hughes. We're in the stretch run of the NBA. We're down to about 20, 21 games. That's it. Jockeying for playoff position. We'll go through that and much, much more. Plus, our daily history lesson, birthdays, and more. It's all on the docket today. Sit back and relax. You've dialed us up, and this is the Jordy Helpert Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
Minutes after the hour, welcome back. A couple of things LSU related I wanted to touch upon real quick. And that is they came out with the Coach of the Year candidates in college basketball. 15 coaches, and Will Wade wasn't one of them. That's an absolute sham, farce, just ridiculous. Ridiculous anecdote. So here's what I do. Leaders of the team, Skylar Mays and company, go win the SEC regular season championship. Get Will Wade the SEC Coach of the Year. Get him into the number. Right now they're a 3 seed. Maybe, just maybe, if things go well, you get up as high as a 2 seed. And then laugh at all those other ones. Now, they're all good coaches, and they're too many to name. Too many to name, too many to go over. I'm not going to waste my time on that. But if Will Wade's not, for the year that they're having right now, and he's not one of the 15 finalists for the Coach of the Year in college basketball, that's an absolute joke. An absolute joke. So, hey, just win the regular season. Keep winning. And if there ever was a team that was overdue to win an SEC tournament title, LSU's the one. It's been since 1980. That's the only one they've won. So just keep winning. And the awards will come. Yes, they will. LSU baseball Look, they let's be honest. They haven't played anybody yet. They haven't. Southern University, God bless them. They're not. No. As evidenced by the fact that LSU sent 14 batters to the plate in the first inning and scored eight, get this, eight unearned runs on just five hits. Yeah, they got a three-run homer from Cade Beloso. Paul Maneri, doing the right, started substituting as early as the second inning. And just let it go. Big takeaways. One, Eric Walker looked really good. He retired the six batters he faced in order, got three strikeouts in two innings, and then they pulled him. Now, Paul Maneri knew that his Sunday starter, Jalen Hill, was not going to play against Texas. Had a little sore arm. So the question is, how does he feel today? But they're going to rest Hill. Walker only threw two innings on a Wednesday, so he will get the Sunday start. So he's back where he was when he had that sensational All-American freshman year before the Tommy John surgery. The other takeaway from me is that Mikhail Hilliard made his season debut after a spectacular freshman All-SEC year last year. He worked around a single and a walk. He posted a scoreless inning in his long-awaited return. So he got back in the throw of things for a little bit. And those are my biggest takeaways from that. But they finally step up in competition, and we'll see. The Raging Cajun fans know what they saw Texas in the season opener. They know what LSU has to play, but LSU has to go play them in Austin. Zach Watson continues to hit the ball for the third consecutive game after that slow start. They moved him up to number two in the batting order, and he seems to have taken off. And Antoine Duplantis just keeps hitting the baseball. My goodness gracious, he's getting closer and closer to the SEC hit record. He had a five-hit night. Five runs batted in. He's now 67 hits away from matching the record, 68 hits away from being the all-time hits leader in SEC history. He's got 23 ribbies on the season. My goodness. So I don't care who you're playing against. You get five hits, you're pretty good. You're pretty good. So LSU, despite, you know, they were looking forward to playing South Alabama. That would have been a much better test than their crosstown neighbors of Southern University. But they weren't able to play. It was postponed. So Paul Maneri is worried about the focus of his club, but they came out on the jump street and just took care of business. It was 8-0 after one, and the game was over. He told the team that they could enjoy the win for 10 minutes, and then it's time to focus and get ready to go for this big series this weekend. Now, a lot of people have asked me about television through that. It's on the Longhorn Network. So call your cable provider, and if you have the Longhorn Network, great. If you don't, call your provider and see if they can do it. I'm sure you can get it done for, you know, you can subscribe for a month and cancel it as soon as it's over, or cancel it as soon as the weekend series is over. But there's got to be a way. Or you can listen to it right here on 103.7 The Game. That would be my suggestion to you and yours. So we'll find out a lot more about this baseball team. But look, Zach Hess was better his second time around. Landon Marceau has put together back-to-back outstanding performances. Hill going to rest a little bit this weekend because of the sore arm. So Eric Walker has looked very good in two appearances. But in two appearances, he's looked very sharp. Now we'll see how long he can go. But there's a reason why Paul Maneri and Alan Dunn got Chase Costello in the ball game, and he recorded a 1-2-3 inning. And then he gave way to Mikhail Hilliard, who pitched one frame as well. They're getting these guys ready. All he's got to tell them is, look, I just need one inning out of you. Throw it as hard as you can and as good as you can, and then we'll take you out. Don't leave anything. So I think you may see that until you get the arm strength up for Walker. Now he's going to hope that Hess can give him can go deep in the game, and he's hoping that Marceau can go deep in the game, and then by Sunday they'll do the committee thing. That's what they'll do. So we shall see how it all turns out on that. Again, check 1037thegame.com for times and everything to do with LSU baseball. Plus, we've got LSU basketball against Alabama. And I know Alabama's struggling. They've been up. They've been down. But I'm going to tell you what, it's going to be one of the toughest road games that LSU has had all year long. It's just one of those places where LSU has very, very, very rarely seen success. Very rarely. Speaking of success, big opportunity for the Raging Cajuns tonight. 7-7 in league play, tied with their opponent tonight, the Coastal Carolina Chanticleers, in the Cajun Dome, seeding in the Sun Belt Conference Tournament on the line. This thing is all bunched up. This Sun Belt Conference Tournament, it's up for grabs. And the winner goes to the dance. And don't count the Cajuns out. I can promise you they're right there in the hunt for this thing. They want to get to a 3 seed or a 4 seed at worst. To do that, they've got to hold serve tonight against the Raging Cajuns. We'll have a preview of that. Eric Mouton, the former Raging Cajun guard, will join us and share his thoughts on a big one for Bob Marlin and the boys. That's next here on the Jordy Helpert Show on Acadiana's number one sports station. 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and it ain't even close. We'll be right back.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Helfberg Show on 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the app.
And we welcome you back. There's a big basketball game tonight as the Raging Cajuns are hosting Coastal Carolina in the Cajun Dome. And these are two teams that are identical, 7 up, 7 down in league play. So jockeying for Sun Belt Conference Tournament seeding is on the line. It'll be on ESPN+. Plus, Eric Mouton will be the color analyst on the ball game, and Eric, kind enough to join us right here, right now, for a preview. Big E, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing good, Jordy. How you doing, man?
I'm doing terrific. Coastal handled Bob Marlin's club earlier in the year, but this is a different Raging Cajun club. They've been on kind of a hot streak of late, haven't they?
Yeah, they absolutely have, man. And they're playing some good basketball right now. And you know what you're going to get from Gant and Stroman. When those other guys step up and make some shots and score some points, they're a dangerous team.
They're in a three-way tie now. The Cajuns, UL Monroe, and Coastal Carolina in the for the 5th seed in the conference. They're 1 spot behind 4th place UTA with a couple of games left to go. So, I mean, they want to get a bye in this tournament. They don't want to have that on-campus first-round game. So this is a very important game for the Raging Cajuns. What have the Raging Cajuns been doing well of late to get on this little mini run?
Well, I think they've been playing some defense. Those guys really stepped up, and Coach Marlin has them bought in that, you know, if you get it done on the defensive side, you're going to give yourself a chance. And then you've got great players and your senior leaders with a couple of juniors and sophomores stepping up. Coastal Carolina will play some defense, too. Now, they're one of the best defensive teams in the league from the field goal and also from behind the three-point arc. So, you know, it's going to be a battle tonight to see who can get more points in there and which team can get stops and rebounds, will probably win the game.
Yeah, to your point, the Cajuns, when they had lost three straight games to fall to 4-6 in league play, they were giving up 101 points per game in that three-game skid, and boy, things have changed considerably. And they're 1 3-point shot away from beating the best team in the conference in Texas State up there in San Marcos. And if you do that, now you're talking about, hey, the winning a championship, regular season titles, not out of the realm of possibility, but they just came up a little bit short.
Yeah, and you know how hard it is, Jordy, to go out on the road in college basketball, and especially in conference, to go win games. You know, you're by yourself. You probably don't have much crowd traveling with you when you go out to some of these games. So it's pretty much your coaches and your teams against the world, and that is one of the most difficult things to do. And they battled and competed all the way down to the wire, but I'm sure they're looking forward to getting back to the friendly confines of the Cajun Dome tonight and Sunday.
Yeah, no question about that. Eric Mouton, kind enough to join us as we talk Raging Cajuns hoops. They'll be taking on Coastal Carolina tonight. So when you look at this matchup, both teams like to play defensively, but you got to get scoring opportunities, and you got to get opportunities that get you free looks at the basket. So I would imagine turnovers always come into play, and if the Cajuns can turn the Chanticleers over and get some runouts and some breakaways, that always plays to their favor.
Yeah, it definitely does. They want to play fast. They want to get up and down the court. You know, Coastal scored 96 last time they played at Coastal. A lot of points there. So I'm sure the Raging Cajuns will want to kind of turn that around and maybe get a little defensive pressure up. But anytime you can get a basket before the defense can set up, you'll take it. And then when you get Stroman in the open court, man, he's so fun to watch because he is a great passer. He's one of the top assist guys in the league. But he's thrown some alley-oops to Gant that have just been unbelievable, some Sports Center top 10. So the faster the game, probably in favor of the Raging Cajuns.
It's been an up-and-down year. I mean, losing one of your key players certainly hurts. I'm sure if you asked Bob, he would say, yeah, not the season we had thought about. What's been the turning point here for them?
Well, I just think they've gotten back to Raging Cajun basketball, which is to really lock in and tune in, zone in, and defend on that defensive side. You know, they lost Marchetti, which was one of their best defenders. So now you got to find someone who can step up and guard the other team's best player. And that guy sometimes is Stroman, and sometimes when he works that hard on the defensive end, because there's some great guards in this league, when he works that hard on the defensive end, sometimes it takes away from his offensive production. You know, at times we've seen him in one half where he hardly scores any points, and then in the second half, he's making up his mind that he's getting to the rim, he's going to help with the scoring side of it. And then sometimes one of the other guards will pick up on the defensive end and take some of those really good players. P.J. Hardy has done that a little bit. Cedric Russell's now playing better. Wesley at the point, the freshman point guard, is also a very good defender. So working that out on the offensive end and the defensive end, where you have to give so much on that end, you still have to get it done on the offensive end. So anytime some of these role players and some of these even reserves coming off the bench, you know, when they get hot, they can score in bunches. So that's what they're hoping to do tonight, I'm sure, get stops and put the ball in the basket.
I think this conference tournament is wide open. The Cajuns showed they lost by two to the team that's leading the league on the road, and it's so significant. I mean, if you the goal is to get to, obviously, to get to the first or second seed, but if you can't, no lower than three or four, because, I mean, you got on-campus games on Tuesday, then 2 days later, you've got the 5 and 6 seeds playing on a Thursday. Then if you win that one, you got to play on a Friday. If you win that one, you got to play on Saturday. And that's a long road. So 3 or 4 seeds don't play until Friday. That's the most a 3-day, 3-game run. And that's doable. So, you know, you get hot at the right time. That's the key.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And you take a look in the past and you look at some of the winners of the regular season. You know, how many times have they gone on to win the conference tournament? You know, last year, Raging Cajuns were You know, Louisiana were the heavy favorites going into the tournament, and then a couple of injuries and some illness. They won the regular season, but they weren't able to turn it around and win that conference tournament and get that bid into the big dance. So rarely does a team in the Sun Belt win the regular season and then go on to the conference tournament. So it's going to be, like you said, I agree, it's wide open. It's going to be some tough, intense basketball once they do get to that neutral site in New Orleans. And, you know, the team that steps up, makes some plays on the defensive end, and you know, makes some three-pointers, which is a big part of the game now. You know, you watch some of these other college teams that are excelling and in the top 25. All those guys shoot the ball and make baskets. So that's going to be a big part as we head into those conference tournaments, no doubt.
Is Ja'Keenan Grant a Sun Belt Conference first-teamer in your book?
MVP, and from what I've seen, okay. And I've watched a few games of them on the road.
Okay.
Man, after losing the player that they lost, you know, when they lose Marchetti, and for him to step up and put up the numbers that he has night in and night out,
to me,
without him, you know, where would Louisiana be?
I'm with you. 20.3 points per game, 8.7 rebounds. He leads the league, 2.8 blocks per game. He leads them in everything. So as he goes, so go the Cajuns. So, and the other thing I like about having that tournament in New Orleans, you know how much the Cajun fans love the Crescent City now. We've seen that in football bowl games. So it'll be predominantly Cajun fans if they can continue to survive and advance.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, the game tonight's a big one. I'm sure there'll be a nice crowd. Then we have senior night Sunday, actually senior day. It's an early start on Sunday at 1:30. And then you're absolutely right. If they can pull these two out, get hot, playing well, crowd behind them going into the conference tournament, I guarantee you there'll be some red and black in the bleachers in New Orleans.
42-21 overall in games played during the month of February. So they'll close out this one, try to get to 43-21. Cliff Ellis, longtime coach in college basketball. He's the head coach for Coastal Carolina, and you know he's going to come up with a plan. So this really ought to be a good one. Two teams, and I know the Cajuns have some motivation on their side of what happened up there in South Carolina earlier in the season. But, man, it should be a fun one for you.
Yeah, no doubt. Two great coaches will be going at it tonight, and there's going to be some good basketball to watch tonight and Sunday. And then we'll see how it all plays out. You know, all eyes are on that conference tournament and the seeding, you talked a lot about. Very important because it's wide open.
Eric Mouton, he'll be on the Call of the Game ESPN+. Buddy, thank you so much for your time, man. Have a good time in the Cajun Dome tonight.
Absolutely, Jordy. Looking forward to it. Anytime, man. Anytime.
All right, buddy. We greatly appreciate it. The key number's 80. Cajuns are 10-3 overall when they score 80 or more points. They're 10-2 overall when they hold their opponents to under 80 points. They would love to get to 80 or their average 82 points per night, which is second best in the Sun Belt Conference. A very pivotal game. ULL, Coastal Carolina, both 7-7. They're not going to win the regular season championship, but seeding in the tournament is up for grabs. We'll be back. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show.
There's only one place you'll find all of the movers, the shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Helfrich Show on 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show. Hope you're having a great day. Thanks so much for making it a part of us. It's a great day for me. I get to talk to Brooks Cabina of the Baton Rouge Advocate, who deals with all things LSU, particularly football. Brooks, thanks for the time on short notice, buddy. How are you?
I'm fine, Jordy. How about yourself, man?
I'm doing terrific. I see another offensive, quote, analyst has been added to the LSU coaching staff. Tell me about this former offensive coordinator at William & Mary. Tell me about him.
Yeah. Well, that's right. DJ Mangus was officially added to the list on offensive analysts for LSU. He was back at William & Mary, started his career there, playing there. You might know him he played with Joe Brady, who was hired as the LSU passing game coordinator earlier this year.
Okay.
And Mangus was the offensive coordinator the past couple of years, past two seasons for William & Mary, and the connection is obviously there with Joe Brady, who was hired. And, you know, he's if you don't know William & Mary, that's a place where a lot of coaches have come out of. There's a long historical tree that goes to guys like Mike Tomlin in the NFL. It branches very wide. There's a very, very respected group of people at William & Mary. Mangus, he's a little he's still early in his career, and as you see with these offensive analyst positions, sometimes they're, you know, notable coaches that, you know, were either, you know, lost their jobs in recent years and then are kind of climbing back into the pool, or you'll see young GAs, young offensive coordinators from FCS level places going to larger programs and becoming a part of their shadow staffs and kind of going along with that. So, you know, Mangus, whenever he was hired 2 years ago as William & Mary's offensive coordinator, he was the second youngest in all of Division One. So very early in his career,
right.
And that's really kind of the summation of who he is and what LSU has just added to their staff.
Sounds good. Bruce Cabina of The Advocate joining us. What do you think Ed Orgeron's looking for? What, you know, when the interview is taking place, what do you think he is looking for out of a, quote, analyst?
Well, you know, it's something that Orgeron's talked about a lot this past year, dating back to even last year, whenever he wanted to expand his analyst staff. We've talked it on this show before. He wants to have a wider range of people looking at film, breaking down stuff. But you know, that's been added in the past couple of weeks, and it expanded last year as well. I think mainly what's going on here is Orgeron's wanted to get to the RPO offense for a long time now. And that was a main reason he added Joe Brady as a passing game coordinator. Now, with Joe Brady having a connection here with DJ, it seems like this is something where they can have more fluid conversations about what they're looking for specifically in the RPO offense. And I think DJ, from his connections with Joe, Brady, that is, you know, would have a very good relationship in what they're looking for. So that's something that's going into next season. You know, Orgeron's talked about it recently, as recent as National Signing Day, how much they want to get to this RPO offense, what he's looked for this whole time. And this is just another addition to get to them where they can get to that level.
Bruce Cabina of the Baton Rouge Advocate, kind enough to join us. How many analysts are there on this staff now? Do you know?
There are 9 on the staff now, as far as the list is on there. That it's kind of shuffled in the past since 2018, the season ended. A couple of guys have left. You might remember a name like Kevin Coyle, who was right on the staff, and he's now a head coach with the Alliance of American Football's Atlanta Legends. So it shifted around. There's 9. It was doubled around that, just around that area last year. You know, who knows what exactly the full number will be by the end of it,
right.
But it's definitely a pretty large number in comparison to what LSU had before last season.
That was going to be my next question. I don't know if there's a cap on this or not, but we shall see. Meanwhile, it's a very important next couple of days for 6 former LSU Tigers who are trying to had their own job interview, speaking-wise and on the field itself at the NFL Combine. What things have you heard with this thing getting ready to kick off on Friday?
Well, actually, right now, the bench presses are going on, the workouts there. Both Nick Brissett and Cole Tracy will be doing that. The running back, Nick Brissett, and Cole Tracy, you've heard of the kicker. I'm not sure how much the bench press will go into what Cole's evaluation will do. He's also running the 40 tomorrow, so maybe that helps on kickoff, but I'm not sure what else. But, you know, going into this, talked to a couple of NFL analysts earlier this week. One of them, NFL Network's Daniel Jeremiah, another guy, Rick Sciarratello, he's a guy who works for the NFL Draft Bible, if you've heard of those things. Mainly, we all know that the 2 top prospects going into this week, Devin White, Greedy Williams, across the board, they're, you know, picked to be within the top 10 in a lot of places. I thought what was interesting, everybody says Devin White is that freak of nature talent that's going to be a top 10 pick. It's why he came out early. But I thought what Jeremiah said was interesting about Greedy Williams. He said he was one of the 3 toughest evaluations for him in the whole draft because he has that smooth, quick, fast athleticism. But he says that from the teams that he's talked to within the NFL, some have him high ranked in the first round, and some have him kind of buried in the back because the knock against him some are is that he's a liability against the run. He's not as physical as other cornerbacks, but I mean, just the way that he played at LSU and his speed and, you know, his ability to cover, that's going to set him apart. And if he shows that this week, it looks like he'll be able to run in that 4.4, maybe even 4.3 range is what some are saying. That'll definitely set him ahead. But, you know, kind of at the on the fringe, you know, you got guys like John Battle, safety, who Jeremiah says is kind of out on the seventh round, late round range. And Cole Tracy even may not be drafted just because of the market of kickers in the past couple of years. You guys might remember Tampa Bay Buccaneers selected a guy named Robert Aguayo from Florida State, who was just a hell of a kicker. They picked him early in the rounds, and he ended up flaming out the first in his first season at the lowest field goal percentage, and they ended up cutting him after the year. So a lot of people are kind of iffy about taking a kicker early in the round, even if not late on. But what I thought was interesting was that Foster Moreau is actually getting a lot of good looks in the NFL. Jeremiah said he was even a fourth-round guy in his mind. I mean, he loved him. He wrote Macho Man in his report about the guy just because he was throwing guys all over the tape with his run blocking and that pass-catching ability that he didn't show much throughout his time at LSU. And that was a lot of factors that we talked about on the show due to injuries and liabilities on offense, things like that. But at the Senior Bowl, he really showed that he could catch the ball and be a receiver. And that, in the NFL right now, personnel-wise, a tight end can play in the backfield as well. You've seen him run at fullbacks and other things. And Foster's got that size and ability to be a flexible player that is valuable across NFL offices right now. So he could be as high as fourth round in this draft. And I feel like that's something most people didn't expect whenever his career ended at LSU.
Yeah, I would think he has the most to gain out of this thing. I think his measurables would be really good. He's big. He's got size. He's got, he's got all the things. He's got length. He's got all the things you're looking for. And plus, once they do the interview with the kid, I mean, come on, he's going to be off the charts.
Right. And that's something everybody's talked about and that I've spoken with is his brightness, his leadership qualities. Those are things that people want to have in their locker rooms, especially so early in his career to jump in and have that attitude. Because early on, I mean, we've all watched NFL preseasons before and rookies come in. You're going to have these roles where you're mainly on special teams and trying to work your way in. What kind of guy are you going to have there working with the other rookies? Yeah. And that's a beneficial thing for Foster. And we talked about John Battle, too. You know, that's something he has as well. And talking with Jeremiah about his IQ, it's the same thing. You know, he's working under Dave Aranda has given him the ability to look at film in ways that other safeties don't. His length, 6'2", is something that might work for him. Although it sort of works against him, too, because of a lot of the drills that he does, built for quicker guys that can move.
Right.
He's more of a 4.7 range guy in the 40, but he's worked out in Florida. If you look on the advocate.com, there's a story yesterday that I published. He's been really working on his speed, and one of the drills, he's been chasing a light. You know, it's like a track with a light that runs up to 20 miles an hour. And he's been trying to chase that for a long time. He's got his speed down to 4.6. Okay. So we'll see if that's something that comes out on Monday. But certainly a lot of things for those guys.
Brooks, thanks for the time, buddy. We greatly appreciate it. Continue the great work for The Advocate. We'll talk soon. Thank you.
Appreciate it, Jordy. You have a good one.
All right, you too. Brooks Cabina. All right, hour one, history. A busy second hour. Hot topics and lots of hoops here on the Jordy Helpert Show.
From the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Packers pulled off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans!
Streaming live on the 103.7 The Game mobile app and online at 103.7thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won!
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
It's hour two of two on a Thursday, the last day of the month of February. Can you believe it? It's the 28th day. Tomorrow we turn to March, and that means basketball really, really taking center stage. And we've got a lot of hoops to talk about in this hour, particularly in the NBA. Of course, we've got a busy, busy weekend here on 103.7 The Game. LSU baseball, three-game series at Texas. LSU basketball, Saturday, 11 a.m., pregame show, 10:30, tip 11 at Tuscaloosa against the Alabama Crimson Tide. So a lot to talk about, and we'll deal with that as it gets closer and closer. But without further ado, let's get busy. Time to take our daily walk around the sports water cooler. CD, hit that button, baby.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
Okay, we got all kind of news going on. I mean, football players going from the booth back to the field. We got little quarterbacks getting bigger. We've got all kind of stuff. So fire away, CD. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Jordy. Like I said at the top of the 2 o'clock hour, my goodness, we've got a lot to talk about when it comes to the world of sports. And, of course, the biggest one of them all is the $330 million man, Bryce Harper, making big bank over 13 years, Jordy.
Why did he do that?
I don't
know. I mean, I know it's a heck of a lot of money. I understand that. But don't you think he could have gotten like a $35 million two- or three-year deal? He's still in his prime. He'd have to be awful, awful to not be able to get another big deal after that. I'm just, you know, 13 years, okay, no opt-out in Philly.
Yeah.
All right, well, look, he doesn't have to worry about any money the rest of his life. I understand all that. It just kind of surprised me a little bit.
It kind of did too, Jordy, but you got to think about it. Bryce Harper, the $330 million man, he definitely made a big impact in terms of the World Series odds, Jordy. They've made a lot of changes. Credits of betonline.ag for these numbers, Jordy. The World Series odds have changed from 12-1 heading into today, and then now it's 8-1 odds. You've got a 4-1 odds of winning the pennant. 5-4 now they're going to wind up winning the division in the NL. And also, their win total change bumped up to about 4.5.
Wow. Wins. Okay, well, hey, look, I'm going to tell you one thing. If he doesn't perform, the Philly fanatics will be all over him. Trust me.
Oh, without a doubt, Jordy. This is a guy that I feel like he is one of the most prolific players in the MLB, one of the more noteworthy ones, the face of the league, I'd feel like, when you look at Bryce Harper, what he's been able to do the last couple of seasons.
What's Mike Trout going to get when his time comes? What's he going to get? Oh, he's better. He's better than all of them.
He's fantastic, Jordy, but man, I just don't think they could wind up backing up the Brinks truck for a guy like that. Because again, you look at Manny Machado, that's a notable name because of his personality more so. So it's going to fit very well in Chavez Ravine. But
You watch.
Yeah.
Trust me. Mike Trout will break the bank. Trust me. The Yankees will get involved in that one. Everybody's going to want him, in my humble opinion. We'll see.
And then he can tweet about the weather all he wants, Jordy.
I'm saying,
Manny Machado, Bryce Harper, two notable names and two big dogs in the world of the MLB. Meanwhile, you look at Mike Trout, definitely the plain Jane, the ho-hum type of guy that likes to talk about the weather.
And just hits the ball and catches everything. So, you're right. We'll see. Next
up, Jordy, we got to talk about it with Kyler Murray. Looks like he had a little growth spurt between the college football playoff and the NFL scouting combine. They got the measurables done today. Kyler Murray currently listed as 5'10" 1/8", Jordy. So now everybody can breathe and say, hey, now we can draft with much confidence. He's going to be the number one pick to the Arizona Cardinals. Jordy, does that happen?
The GM said Josh Rosen is our quarterback for now. So we'll see. We'll see. Somebody's going to fall in love with him, and somebody's going to make a move, whether it's the Cardinals or somebody's going to move up to trade to get him. It'll be a very interesting. Nashville has really lucked out on this thing. They're going to have a very interesting NFL draft when it comes to town. People will be watching.
Man, Jordy, all kinds of great stuff to talk about with Kyler Murray. Cannot wait to see what he's going to wind up doing once he gets that 40-yard dash, the bench press, and everything in between. Because it's this underwear Olympics, Jordy, the NFL Combine. What a great time.
Yes,
that being
indeed.
Said, though, Jordy, another big story coming out is Jason Witten. He is officially back in the league, coming back to play for the Dallas Cowboys. That's the weirdest thing ever.
Obviously, he got the word that, look, we're not going to renew. We had a good 1 year with you, but you got to go do something else because obviously they didn't like what he did, because if they did, they would have offered him more money, but he wants to go back because I really think he wants to be a coach. So he's going to go back. I think he will play some. He will be a guiding light in the locker room. He'll be a mentor to the younger players. He's that glue guy that you need. People respect him. So Jerry Jones, very loyal to his players, past and present, and welcomes Jason Witten, the Hall of Fame tight end to be, back into the fold. Just wasn't a very good broadcaster, in my opinion. So now what does Monday Night Football do? That's the question. Is Booger going up to the booth? Are they going to go and make a play for, my boy at CBS?
Tony Romo?
Tony Romo. They're going to go and look at Chris Collinsworth and see if they can get him as options. But how deep of pockets will Disney go? We'll see.
Exactly. I mean, it could very well be a situation where you're talking about Disney. Disney could very well get the rights back for ABC to have Monday Night Football. At least it's the rumor in your window, but that's going to be future talk, Jordy. Yeah. We got to talk about Jason Witten. You're talking about him being a head coach. I think he might be gunning for your boy, Jason Garrett's job, because we know he's definitely on the hot seat right now.
I can't picture Witten with that personality or whatever being a head coach. I think he wants to be a position coach, personally. Maybe he wants to get in the front office, become a GM one day. I don't know. I don't know him at all. But I know he gets open and he catches passes. He can't run worth a lick, but he's a Hall of Fame tight end. So we'll see. We'll see.
Exactly, Jordy. And some good news came out of LSU yesterday. Eric Walker, his first start since the College World Series in 2017.
Yeah.
Retired all six batters, and he'll wind up getting the nod again on Sunday. Can he sustain that success, Jordy?
That's the big question. How quick is his recovery, and how far will Palmieri and Allen Dunn go with him on a Sunday? He's only pitched like an inning here, an inning there, two innings last night against Southern. What's his arm strength going to be? Is he going to do maybe two innings and then go by rotation from there? Time will tell. But good for him, because he's really, really good, and they sure will need him in this long baseball season. Thank you, CD. There's your Hot Topics for the day, brought to you by the best hot sauce every day, and that is Cajun Chef, the Biard family. We talk about them every day. Consistently great for nearly 90 years. Awesome. Bring a little small bottle of Cajun Chef hot sauce with you wherever you go, because I'm telling you, everything tastes better with Cajun Chef on it. We know what the Lakers offered for Anthony Davis. What do you think the Celtics, what kind of package they would put together? One of the best Celtics bloggers out there joins us next, where we hypothesize about that story and more. This is the Jordy Helpert Show, Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game.
Topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back. This is the Jordy Hultberg Show, brought to you by DC's Little Capital Exxon, I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia Exit in Bro Bridge for all your travel needs. DC's Little Capital Exxon, the place to be. He is the sports information director at LaSalle University, and that's terrific. But more importantly to me and to us now, he is a basketball junkie and a basketball blogger. He has joined us again, he particularly dealing with the Boston Celtics. Nick Lance, kind enough to join us. Nick, good day, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing well, Jordy. Thanks for having me.
You know, everybody talks about this Anthony Davis scenario with the Lakers prior to the trade deadline. I'm more interested in What's going on in the thoughts and minds you think of Danny Ainge and the Boston Celtics? Obviously, something is amiss with the Celtics this year. They've lost four in a row as we speak. They just don't seem to be gelling together. What's going on with that venerable franchise of the Boston Celtics?
Well, it's tough to point it down to just one thing. I mean, they certainly have the talent. You know, you're talking about Kyrie Irving, Gordon Hayward, Al Horford, you know, all-star perennial players. And it's hard to say. I mean, they're on this slide now. I think a lot of it has kind of just been the team chemistry. That's kind of been a lot of what they've been saying, is that they just haven't been able to work together as a team and kind of identify themselves, you know, what they're trying to accomplish out of this season. And it's been tough to watch for Celtics fans, that's for sure.
Yeah, I talked about, well, the Lakers fell apart because all these young players knew that, that Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka wanted to trade off all of them to get Anthony Davis.
Right.
While the Pelicans are saying, no, everybody knows they're waiting to see what Danny Ainge and the Celtics are going to offer in the summertime. Do you think that's had any effect on some of these younger players in Boston?
You want it. If you're a Boston fan, you know, you hope that it isn't. But at the same time, you know, when you see all these rumors going around, you know, on social media and on ESPN and whatnot, you know, it's hard to imagine that that's not getting into their heads. And it's probably the same for Kyrie Irving. I mean, he's a free agent at the end of this year. All the questions that he's been asked about, you know, is he going to re-sign with Boston? Is he going to go elsewhere? You know, that definitely has to become a factor. And you think about somebody like Jason Tatum, you know, who has been a very key player for the Celtics, and you know, maybe talking about maybe throwing him into a trade mix and whatnot. You know, you definitely start to wonder if that gets into their head and does maybe affect them.
Anthony Davis is one of those generational type players. I don't think there's any question about that. And Boston's let it be known through certain channels for years now that they want him. What would you, as a, if you were a Boston fan, what would you be willing to part with to be able to get a player of his magnitude? And is it even feasible now with what's going on with Kyrie? Who knows what he's going to do?
Yeah, you know, you think about somebody like Anthony Davis, and they just, somebody like that just doesn't come around too often. I mean, you're talking about, you know, 28 points a game, 13 rebounds, 2.5 blocks. You know, there's just not that much productivity out of a big man like that these days. So, you know, what they're willing to offer, I think, you know, they're willing to pretty much give up anything. And, you know, definitely the top two things, you know, the top two players that they have to offer are Jason Tatum, like we mentioned, and then Jaylen Brown as well. You know, Jason Tatum, you know, he's averaging about 16 points a game, 6 rebounds, you know, his sophomore year. You know, Jaylen Brown, you know, he's right there too at 13 points per game. But these are young guys, you know, still very young, but they've shown that they were capable. I mean, last year, when Kyrie Irving goes down to injury, and they were a huge, huge part in leading the Celtics to the Eastern Conference Finals. So, you know, those two pieces, while, you know, Celtics fans are certainly attached to, you know, these two guys, you know, again, we're talking about Anthony Davis. This is a major, major key who can definitely turn any franchise around. I really don't have to tell you guys that too much down in New Orleans, but, you know, on top of Tatum and Brown, you know, you can talk about other guys. You know, maybe a Marcus Smart. You know, a Terry Rozier was probably somebody who would have been in the mix at you know, the trade deadline time, but he's a free agent, so I'm not too sure where that's going to go. But obviously, you think about the Celtics, and we talk about the draft picks, and here we go again. You know, the Celtics have a stockpile again this year. You know, right now they could potentially have up to 4 picks. They've got the Sacramento Kings pick. They've got Grizzlies first-round pick, top 8 protected. Clippers first-round pick, top 14 protected. And you know, and if they don't use the Grizzlies or Clippers this year, you know, it rolls over to next year. So they've got multiple assets, whether it's players, whether it's draft picks, that they might be able to put something together here. And it kind of depends on what the Pelicans are looking to take from this.
Nick Lance kind enough to join us. Oh, I think they want the world. And then, do you, other than the players from Duke and the guard from Murray State, do you think this is a, because I'm hearing this draft is not as strong as people may tend to think it is, other than a few here and there?
Yeah, no, and you're right on point. You know, everything that I've heard, it's really just top heavy. It's not a very deep draft. Obviously, if you can land one of those, you know, maybe top five picks, you know, Zion Williamson, RJ Barrett are definitely out there. You know, the kid from Murray State as well. You know, but as far as, you know, lower down in the lottery, I'm not so sure that, you know, there's somebody who's really big enough to be, you know, a major part of a trade like this. You know, next year, you know, maybe we'll see when that comes. But as far as this year goes, unless you can really get, you know, maybe a top three pick, it's kind of slim pickings.
All right, I'm going to put the Pelicans hat on you, and you're the GM, okay? And
okay.
You've got Anthony Davis, who has told you, I don't want to be here anymore, and trade me now and get as much as you can for me. What do you want from Boston that would intrigue you and make you pull the trigger and do the deal? What would you want? Knowing Boston as well as you do, take your allegiance away from it, make the best deal for the Pelicans.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you want really as much as possible. And, again, I kind of keep going back to Jason Tatum as the key part of this. I think that he is a truly special player that can become a, you know, big-time all-star in this league. And right now, you know, if you're the Pelicans, you can get him at, you know, $7 to $8 million a year. You know, he's signed through 2021. And he's only going to continue to get better. And we saw it last year, you know, in their playoff run. He really, really stepped up. And, you know, he can hit the mid-range shot. He can hit the outside shot. His game is just very polished. And it, offensively, he's, you know, he looks more like a veteran out there at time with mm-hmm. the post moves and the fadeaway. So Jason Tatum has to be number one on that list. And Jaylen Brown is a good player as well. I mean, he's, uh-huh. you know, he plays good defense. He can score. He's a high flyer. You know, he is signed through next year. So, again, anything with this, you know, you want to try and make sure that you can get, you know, return for the long haul. But,
right.
you know, again, as well, draft picks are obviously huge. I mean, losing somebody like Anthony Davis is big time. So it's going to take some time to rebuild. And you look like somebody, you look at a team like, you know, the Philadelphia 76ers and the time that it took them to, you know, trust the process, if you will, and build off draft picks and young players. But, you know, you look at them now and it's kind of worked out for them. So
do you think, Nick,
look at what you got.
Yeah. Do you think, Nick, that if they pull the trigger and Kyrie, do you think Kyrie Irving is going to be a Boston Celtic next year?
So we like to think so, and certainly before this season, I mean, it seemed like a lock. He had even said at the very beginning of the season that,
right.
you know, he was expecting to come back. But, you know, you never know. And, you know, I never thought that Kevin Durant would end up in Golden State. So
that's true.
Yeah, you know, it really depends on what's kind of going through his mind. There are rumblings of New York. And whatnot, but certainly if the Celtics are able to pull a deal with New Orleans here to get Anthony Davis, I think 100% Kyrie would come back.
Gordon Hayward, is he in the Celtics' future plans, or is he part of the deal that would bring him to New Orleans, or is that just foolish thinking?
Yeah, Hayward, you know, Hayward, I feel for the guy because he is tremendously talented player. He's a very good shooter, can do a lot of things. And to watch him last year in the first game of the year suffer the type of injury that he suffered, it was just really hard to watch.
Yes.
And it's taken some time for him to come back and get into himself. And he's shown glimpses. I mean, he's had some big games for them this year, but there's also been times where he's kind of been non-existent. And
right,
I think
right.
the biggest part for him is defensively. Right now, I'm not so sure how much the Celtics can trust him defensively. But again, you know, you got to give him a little bit of leeway considering where he's coming from off this injury. Now, can he come back next year and be, you know, 20-plus points per game and be a big-time three-point shooter? Absolutely. I think there's no doubt in my mind. It's just going to take a lot of work and a lot of, you know, recovery time for him to bounce back from that. And in terms of, you know, this trade, well, you know, Gordon, you know, he just signed a big, big deal with Boston last year. You know, he's making, you know, so in the ballpark of, you know, $30 million a year. Now, if New Orleans wants to take that on, if we're trying to match contracts here, you know, you could look at that. There's definitely the risk with the injury there, but, you know, it could certainly be a possibility.
All right, I'm going to ask one last question. Nick Lance, give me you're betting the house on this one now. Anthony Davis will be a Celtic, or Kyrie Irving will not be a Celtic next year? What's the better odds?
Oh, you know, I think I got to go with Anthony Davis as a Celtic. Really, okay. I think kind of just taking it from the trade deadline here where the Lakers, it really looked like, you know, they had a strong offer. You know, you're talking about Kyle Kuzma, Brandon Ingram, Lonzo Ball. And if the Pelicans think that the Celtics, you know, can trump that, then, you know, they've got to be thinking positively towards that way.
He's a basketball blogger. He also does some work at LaSalle University. Thank you, Nick. Always fun talking with you, buddy. Take care.
Hey, thanks, Jordy. You as well.
All right. We'll take a time out. We'll come back with Grant Hughes' perspective, the Bleacher Report, NBA feature writer. More NBA talk here on the Jordy Helfrich Show.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
And as they like to say, down the stretch we come in the National Basketball Association. Three quarters of the season is in the books, so let's find out where things stand and what to look forward to as some teams are taking, some teams are jockeying for playoff position. Grant Hughes, feature writer of the NBA for Bleacher Report, and one of my favorite guests on the program when we can get him because he's a busy guy. But, Grant, good day, my friend. How are you?
I'm good. I'm with you. I'm looking forward to how a bunch of these playoff races shape up. I think we got less than 6 weeks left.
Yeah, you know, there's about 50, 60 games in the book. They play 82. So, you know, when you look at the big picture, where are you focusing on?
Certainly you got to, you know, keep your eyes on the teams at the top of the conference and a team like Denver that's really a half game back of the top seed in the West now all of a sudden. But I think I'm probably most interested in, you know, you've got four teams really fighting for the last two playoff spots in the West.
Right.
And one of them is the Lakers, which happen to have LeBron James, and so that's a big deal. So that's kind of where I'm most focused right now, just trying to parse, you know, which of those four teams really looks like it has the best chance down the stretch to get there.
Is it beneficial for the Lakers to actually make the playoffs? If they do, they're going to be an 8 seed in all likelihood, and they got to play Golden State. So does it really behoove them, or is it better for them to not make the playoffs?
Yeah, I don't know. I think you could definitely generally make the argument that it's worse to finish 8th and get bounced in the first round than it is to finish and get a lottery pick. But you know, it seems like the people in the know are not big on this year's draft, so you kind of throw that out. And then the whole deal of, you know, say the Lakers finish 8th, right, or even 7th, because 7 and 8 are tied right now, and the Lakers are three games back of both. If they get in there, I mean, the Warriors don't want to see LeBron in the first round if they had their choice. And if it's the Nuggets and it's a Lakers-Nuggets series, these Nuggets have zero playoff experience except for Paul Millsap. So I think the Lakers, you know, as much as any 8th seed really does, or 7th or whatever they end up doing, they could win a series. And that's not because I think they're a great team. It's because they have LeBron, and I'm not going to bet against them. I'm just not going to do it.
Grant, bigger disappointment, the Lakers at currently 10th in the West, or heaven forbid, the Boston Celtics 5th in the East. Who's had a more disappointing season?
I think it's probably Boston.
I agree.
At least relative to preseason expectations, you know, because I didn't think the Lakers were that great because I hated all their moves other than getting LeBron in the offseason, and they had a bunch of young guys. And so, you know, maybe I thought they'd finish fourth or something, but the Celtics were, you know, supposedly a superpower. They were super deep. They had all these young guys that were supposed to get better. Kyrie Irving was going to be healthy. Gordon Hayward's going to be healthy. And it just, you know, what have they lost? 4 straight, I think. And they just rolled over against the Raptors, which just is a really bad look because, in theory, if the Celtics are going to do anything, they'll have to beat Toronto in a series at some point. So I just and maybe the most frustrating thing is it's just hard to pin down what's going on. It seems like they're not happy. It seems like they don't enjoy playing with each other.
Right.
You get these cryptic comments from Marcus Smart about guys kind of being out for themselves. And So for me, I think, you know, they're easily one of the most frustrating teams, but definitely a bigger disappointment than the Lakers.
Grant Hughes, Bleacher Report, feature writer of the NBA. In the East, there's 3 teams basically jockeying for 1 last playoff spot: Charlotte, Orlando, Miami. Golly, who's the best of those 3?
Yeah, not a great bunch, right?
Uh-uh.
I mean, Orlando... I thought Orlando was one of the worst teams in the league up until about a month ago. But they by far have been better than Charlotte and Miami. Orlando, I think, has won 7 of 10. And both, you know, Charlotte's lost 3 in a row. The Heat lucked out on a Dwayne Wade game winner last night, but they look really shaky. I hate to pick Orlando, but I mean, if momentum is real, they've got it. So, but really, whoever finishes 8th is going to get annihilated by the Bucks.
No question. We saw some interesting things and some interesting developments. First, Dwayne Wade hits the miracle luck shot to beat the Golden State Warriors. Where do you put Dwayne Wade in your list of all-time shooting guards in NBA history?
Well, I mean, I don't know how you weigh him or anybody against, you know, some of the, you know, past greats of the past eras, but, you know, for me, and there are a lot of, you know, there aren't a lot of people that think this, but I, you know, frankly, I like Wade better than I like Kobe Bryant.
Me too.
So wherever you've got Kobe, let's put Wade above him, which puts him in the running for one of the best shooting guards ever, period, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I loved his game when he was young. He was so aggressive, and he's one of the greatest shot-blocking guards we've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And now
talk
he's just kind of getting by on tricks, and that's fun too.
Talk about a two-way player, right? I mean, he did it all.
Yeah, he was great. And he was the best player on a title team.
Yes.
You know, back before the Heat had LeBron, that title team was really all about him, even though they had Shaq at the tail end there. But he was the guy that made that team go.
And then we're watching, what a class act from Doc Rivers not too long ago with, the improved salute to Dirk Nowitzki. Now, all of a sudden, Dirk's thinking about coming back for another year? Well, has he found some lubricant to put on those squeaky knees? I mean, it's painful watching him run.
It is, and that's kind of been my thought, because he never said this is it. He's made it very clear that he's just going to kind of see how he feels, which is the approach he took last year. So all these tributes and all this stuff is so awkward to me, because, like, what happens next year if he plays again? Are we just going to pretend like this past this farewell tour never happened? It's so funny. I hope he, you know, I don't know. I'm kind of sentimental about him. He's one of my favorites ever. And so if he wants to play again, I don't care. Give him 8 minutes a game and have him around to mentor Luka Doncic. I don't think that could, you know, that's only a good thing if he wants to just be around. But, you know, he's barely moving at all out there. It's really been that way for 2 or 3 years now.
Could you imagine Porzingis and Nowitzki and Doncic, who is 19 years old now? I mean, that's just amazing. Grant Hughes, Bleacher Report. The Pelicans looking for a GM. Danny Ferry's the interim. What odds do you give Danny Ferry of becoming the permanent?
Well, I don't know. They got to be pretty good. I think he's in an impossible position with this, you know, Davis having to play a certain amount and But at the same time, if you're succeeding Dell Demps, it's really hard to look bad. So, he's got as good a shot as anybody. I mean, you know, David Griffin is out there. He's doing TV now, and he was with the Cavs for most of their title runs with LeBron. But I don't know. It's a tough job, really, because you've still got the Benson family, you know, beholden to the Saints in a lot of ways. And it's a difficult position to be in, especially if, you know, once Davis is gone. But it's hard to say. I don't mind Danny Ferry. He had, you know, that controversial thing with the Hawks that, you know, cost him his job years ago. If that's kind of forgotten, you know, in terms of, you know, know-how and connections around the league and experience and all that stuff, you know, I believe he's from the Spurs sort of management tree.
Correct.
Too.
Correct.
There's a lot to like about him. I just don't know.
But so was Dell Demps.
Sure. Yeah. You can't always count on that, I guess. Right.
That's right. He did make a move. Have you ever heard or know anything about this guy named Darius Bertans from, the Italian team Olimpia Milano? Apparently he's a pretty good 3-point shooter, but what's that all about?
Yeah, that's all I know. 54% from deep. You know, his brother Davis is on the Spurs, and he's a heck of a shooter too. To me, if he was that good, I'd be curious why he's not, you know, looking at a playoff team or playoff
exactly.
teams weren't looking at him or something like that. But you never know. You know, some of these guys in the EuroLeague, that, you know, they play better when they get over to the American game because it's more wide open and all that stuff. But it'll be interesting to see. I'm just mostly curious why now and why the Pelicans.
You always make us come back down to earth in the right way, and that's good because I agree with you. I've got that little side of me that goes, you know, when somebody makes a trade, well, if they really liked him that much, why are they getting rid of him? So anyway, I'm with you. I keep waiting for the shoe to drop on the Milwaukee Bucks, but, man, they're 47-14 as we speak. They've won 6 in a row. Are they that good?
Yeah. I mean, the short answer is yeah. And really, they've been that good all year. I mean, just start to finish, wire to wire, they, you know, their point differential has been the best in the league. They win close games like they did last night in overtime. They blow teams out. They're the best defense in the league. They spread the floor better than just about anybody on offense. I mean, it's, you know, you look for holes when you're talking about a potential title contender, which I think the Bucks clearly are. And it's just hard to find any. They've got a ton of depth. If you had to pick one thing to say it's a weakness, is that, you know, their second best player is probably Chris Middleton. And I don't know if that's a little bit worse than you want your second best player to
right.
be on a title team.
Right.
But the thing is, they've got like 4 or 5 guys that are about as good as Middleton. So really they have several kind of, you know, 2A guys or third best type guys, which maybe that works out. I just, you know, they're just really good, and they've been really good all year. And I hope we see them in the finals. I'm most interested to watch them.
So you're saying they are not the Toronto Raptors of a year ago who stormed through the regular season, right? And then, phew, laid an egg.
Yeah. I mean, who knows? You know, you look at teams like this, and this is a criticism I have of Denver potentially. You know, they didn't make the playoffs last year. So a lot of times a team on the upswing, you know, first round loss, make it a couple rounds the next year, make it to the finals, win a ring. That's kind of the cliche, you know, track. The Bucks haven't quite, you know, they haven't been to a conference finals, obviously.
Yeah.
So maybe it's an inexperienced thing, but they're just so complete. And certainly the Raptors had a track record of laying eggs in the playoffs. The Bucks, you know, don't quite have anything hanging over them like that.
Who is the biggest competitor to Golden State in the West?
You know, I knew you were going to ask me that, and I thought about it before I came on today, and I just don't have a good answer.
I know.
Tell me what you think about this. I think probably if I had to pick, it's the Rockets. And the only reason, there are a couple. One is James Harden is just kind of unsolvable, although he has his own playoff kind of disappearances to worry about. And, you know, the Rockets should have beaten the Warriors in the conference finals last year if they don't go ice cold in game 7. And to me, like, Denver doesn't worry me. The Thunder have shooting issues, and Russell Westbrook does not concern the Warriors at all, I don't think. Okay. I think that's really clear.
Okay.
And then you're looking at Utah, and do you want to talk yourself into the Lakers with LeBron? Houston just seems like the team that's been there and the team that has the capacity because of Harden to just, you know, just run hot and beat anybody. So hesitantly, I think it's probably the Rockets.
But they're just a different team this year. And Chris Paul's like non-existent to me. I don't know. I don't get it. So it seems to me the most intriguing playoffs are going to be coming out of the East because, I mean, Philly's got some players. I know Boston's going south right now, but maybe, just maybe, I don't know. And Indiana, how in the heck are they where they are? How are they doing it? No Oladipo. I mean, he's got to be the coach of the year.
He's definitely in the running, Nate McMillan. First of all, their defense is great. It's been top three or four all year. Miles Turner has taken a huge step on that end. And they, you know, they're a little like the Bucks in one sense in that they've got three or four guys. You know, Thaddeus Young can play. Bojan Bogdanovic is one of the most underrated wings in the league. Domantas Sabonis is going to average like 14-9 in, mm-hmm. in under 30 minutes, which has never mm-hmm. happened before. They just have a lot of, you know, good players, no great ones. But on, you know, if they finish among the top four teams in the East, with all that said, I'll be shocked. Just because, you know, Philly, Boston, Toronto, Milwaukee, the talent gap is just enormous.
All right, give me your dream scenario, Eastern Conference Finals, Western Conference Finals, and what's the best finals matchup that people are going to want to watch? Because LeBron's not going to be in it for the first time in forever. So I'm sure the NBA has a little trepidation about that. But what is your dream scenario?
I think if I get to pick in the West, obviously the Warriors, whether you want them there or not, I think they'll be there. And although I think the Rockets are, I still think they're maybe they have the best chance of beating Golden State, I'd almost mm-hmm. rather see Denver.
Okay.
Just because, I mean, imagine the points scored in that series and how up and down it would be. I think still people need to see more of Nikola Jokic to appreciate how good he is. And mm-hmm. I think in a conference finals, you get some national recognition. In the East, Milwaukee for sure. And I really want to see the Sixers get there. I think the Raptors may do it, but I want to see Joel Embiid in a conference finals playing, you know, close to 40 minutes if he can. I want to see Ben Simmons get attacked as a non-shooter in a, okay. you know, big moments. I want to see what those guys have. And then in the finals, I want to see the top seeds. I want to see the Bucks and Warriors just because I like the idea of the two best teams in the league. You know, let's sort this out over seven games. Let's see if the dynasty continues or if maybe there's a new one.
And I think if we had asked the television networks, they'd want to see Philly and Boston in the East and Golden State and L.A. in the West. I know it's not going to happen, but that's what they would want. That's what would want. All right. This is what I think the Pelicans messed up on when they were playing the Lakers the other night. I think they should have told Anthony Davis, I want you to put on a Kobe night. I want you to shoot it every time. I want you to get 60 points. And then we can go look at the Lakers and say, okay, now what are you going to offer in the summertime? I think they missed a golden opportunity there. You know what I'm saying?
Well, anything would have been better than what we've been watching with his 5-minute stints at a time. And tell me this. I know we got to go, but what's the fan sentiment there? Nobody wants him to keep playing, right? Like
no.
The fans in New Orleans are done with this, aren't they?
My solution was this. My solution was he never plays a home game ever again. And he plays 15, 20 minutes on the road if you got to do it. But he never plays at home again. It's bad.
Yeah.
They boo.
Yeah.
It's ugly. That's and the NBA should step in and do something about this because it's not helpful to anybody at all.
I was just going to say it's the rare situation where absolutely no one can be happy about this. Not Davis, not the Pelicans, not the league, not his teammates, not Alvin Gentry. It's the worst possible solution.
All right, Grant Hughes, we are coming down the stretch, and we'll see how these teams jockey for playoff position. I can't wait, man. Always great. Have a great weekend, and keep watching the hoops, my friend.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right, take care. Grant Hughes, Bleacher Report, the NBA feature writer. Yeah, the Eastern race is going to be better, but it's still the Warriors. We'll be back. here on the Jordy Helpert Show.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Helfberg Show on 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the app.
Welcome back. Time for a little history lesson as we do each and every day. February 28th, the year 2010, the Winter Olympics in Vancouver. Sydney the Kid Crosby's overtime goal put Canada at the top of the podium in a thriller of a gold medal game. Sid the Kid, the Pittsburgh Penguin, getting it done for his home country of O Canada on this day, February 28th, the year 2010. Birthday wishes time. If today is your birthday, happy birthday from all of us at KLWB 103.7 The Game and throughout Delta Media. Hope you have a great, great day. You share it with one of the great hockey players, Eric Lindros. Happy 45th birthday to the former Philadelphia Flyer. Patrick Monahan, 49 years old today. Lead singer, Train, yes. Saw him in concert. Really, really good. To say the very, very least. Let's see, who else is telling? Bernadette Peters, actress extraordinaire, 70 years young today. And speaking of young, Allie Larder is celebrating a birthday. She is 42 years old today. That football movie. Anyway, Friday Night Lights, she was in that one. And 19 years old, happy birthday, Luka Doncic of the Dallas Mavericks. Just 19, getting ready to play with Kristaps Porzingis and maybe even Dirk Nowitzki one more time. Holy cow, holy cow. Special thanks to our guest, Eric Mouton. Good luck to the Raging Cajuns and Bob Marlin tonight in hoops. Brooks Cabina of The Advocate, on the newest offensive analyst. That's the growing trend for LSU football. Nick Lance talking about the Celtics and what's going to take to get Anthony Davis and all things NBA with my main man, Grant Hughes. Tomorrow we'll preview LSU baseball versus Texas, LSU basketball Saturday at Alabama. Ooh, beware, beware, beware. Difficult place to play. CD, great job as always, my producer extraordinaire. Thanks to all of you for listening, to our partners that make it possible each and every day. We only have one Thursday, February 28th. Let's end the month out the right way. Have a great evening. Come on back tomorrow, Friday, same time, 2 to 4, same great station, 103.7 The Game. Until then, I'm Jordy Helfberg. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.